Please welcome Rosh Wright.
Okay, so some of you I know in this room are old enough to remember the early 1980s when PATCO, the Air Traffic Controllers Union, got fired by Reagan. And at the time, my boyfriend was an air traffic controller, and he got fired by Reagan. I had no legal standing in the States. I couldn't stay here and work. He had no job, and so we got married. And then I could stay. And no, I wasn't faking it. I was in love with him. So we got married, and I was very lucky. I got a job at Stanford. And we hadn't been married very long when I got an opportunity to go to Saudi Arabia for 3 months. They were opening the new King Fahad Hospital in Riyadh, and they needed pediatric nurses to go and open the pediatric unit. And so, always one for adventure, I signed up. And Stanford very kindly gave me 3 months off, and I was told I had to report to Nashville, Tennessee. I knew that that was somewhere in the States. I wasn't quite sure where, for orientation. And so I presumed orientation would be, you know, learning what sort of drugs they would have in Saudi Arabia, that, you know, that medications that I was unfamiliar with, or what equipment we'd be using, or what our shifts would be, or something like that. But orientation actually turned out to be how to be in Saudi Arabia, how to adapt to the culture, how to behave so as not to end up at Chop Chop Square, and this sort of thing. We were doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, physical therapists, all medical people of different disciplines. And we sat there being told all this thing. There was one nurse who was from the south somewhere, Alabama or something, and she had a very, very blonde, almost white blonde hair that was piled up on her head in a big bun. And our instructor said, the Saudis will come up and touch your hair. And when we got to Saudi Arabia, that happened. And 2 weeks later, she said, I can't take this. And she was on the plane back home. But we were just told all these stories and how we really, really did have to behave ourselves. Apparently, there had been a British nurse there who was running her sort of own little prostitution ring there in the kingdom, being paid in silver and gold and jewels, of which there is an abundance, and she was burying them in the desert somewhere. And someone got word of this, and she would literally have ended up at Chop Chop Square, so she literally had to be flown out under the dead of night out of the kingdom. So if anybody's a little short on cash, if you want to go and look in the desert somewhere, there's a nice little stash of silver and gold. So anyway, with all this information of what we could and couldn't do, we got over there. We were living in a medical facility, pretty separated from Riyadh and the town, but there were buses that would take us in. They would take us in to go shopping. They did have these wonderful, what they call souks. It's open market and these open stores. They called them the souks. And we were also warned that being a lot of us young women, I mean, this is going back a few decades, that we would very likely get pinched when we were doing our shopping, and it became a sort of joke. Did you get pinched in the souks today? Yeah, and that's not the only place I got pinched either. So we tried to adapt to this life over there. We were told absolutely no alcohol in the kingdom. Obviously very, very strict rules about males and females being seen together. I was actually, of the whole sort of group of us, I was the only one who was actually married. Most other people were divorced or single. And if they wanted to go out on dates with each other, I got to go along as a chaperone. So I went on a lot of dates in Saudi Arabia as a married woman. It's very odd. But this one time we were invited to a party. It was the biomechanical engineer for one of the king's many wives. She had some form of diabetes and needed dialysis, and he was her dialysis engineer. And he was very in with the royal family. So we were invited to a party, and we were told that we absolutely, of course, could not take alcohol, even though there were a few people who were brewing it illegally. And when we showed up at this party, there would be royalty there. And so we showed up. And as we all were filing in, people were being introduced as Mr. and Mrs., Mr. and Mrs., Mr. and Mrs., although none of them were Mr. and Mrs. at all. And just as it happened, I was sort of on the end, and there wasn't a Mr. for me. So it looked as if I was the only single female there. And I didn't really notice this myself, but apparently one of the princes was sort of making a beeline for me because he thought I was like the only available female. And then, you know, we're sitting there sipping our tea and talking very politely. Most of these Saudi princes had been educated in America, so they spoke very good English. And then, of course, they start, you know, fumbling around among their robes and start bringing out the bottles of scotch and gin and things. And it was at this point that I realized that in Saudi Arabia, although we have to really, really follow the rules don't necessarily apply to everyone. I really hope that I'm not insulting all the Saudis in the room, by the way. Please excuse me. I don't mean to do that. I had a wonderful 3 months. But basically, this is when I realized that in the kingdom, between the royal family and the Bedouins, there's a lot of differences, and there's a lot of faking it going on.